Daniel chapter 3 is where we're going to be at. I didn't get you an email today to say, hey, read Daniel 3 before you come to church tonight. But we're kind of going to kind of do this the way we did Daniel 2 last week. Some of this is familiar story for us anyways, as far as the events and things like that. Some of you have experienced this, I know, and I was trying to think of who was the last one to experience this in our church. It was like this year already. You have a planned surgery, and the doctors tell you, you know, you've got to be there at like 3:30 in the morning, or well, usually it's like 5:30, so they can do all the surgery prep to get you ready for that 7:30 surgery, okay? And you guys know that's early. I've been up there for some of you while you're waiting for that 7:30 surgery, and so 7:30, and so then you're all prepped, you're ready, and you wait and wait and wait, and you're watching the clock, and it stops moving, of course, and it's supposed to be at 7:30. And it's past 7:30 now, and no one's come in to see you, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and then they say, well, he's still in surgery, it's going to be 11 o'clock now, okay? Okay, we've got an end date, an end time in mind here, and so you wait, and wait, 11 o'clock comes and goes, and now they're saying, an emergency came in. That was more emergency than your emergency, apparently. And it's going to be afternoon now before the surgical team can do your surgery. Okay, so I was there with someone. And I'm telling you, there was frustration, okay? I was frustrated. And it wasn't even my surgery. The person having the surgery was frustrated because they're like, they're all geared in their mind. Okay, 7:30. Like 2 hour surgery, I'm going to be done, out, recovery, blah, 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 and this and that. They have it all planned out in their mind. They've wrapped their mind around it. They're good. And I'm thinking, okay, 7:30, surgery starts a couple of hours, 9:30, they go to recovery. That's usually when I take off because you all don't want me to see you in recovery anyway, okay? Because I will be videotaping every goofy thing you say. So 9:30, I'm taking off. I'm back in the office at 10. Here it is, the middle of the afternoon. I could have been in the office and then just come up this afternoon. Now, I've never really thought that, okay? I'm just making up these frustrations that we feel when unexpected things happen to us. Unexpected, unplanned, and this actually happened to someone that I was reading about, only they were going in for cancer surgery, a mastectomy, and they just found out that she had this. And surgery is scheduled. They're like not messing around. There's no waiting around. There's no protocol and treatments and this and that. Boom, we're doing this. We got to get it done. And then they're thinking, okay, it's not going to be till later in the afternoon. The surgeon has already been in, he'll have already been in surgery for like 12 hours. He's going to be a little tired. Can we reschedule this? They said, sure, the soonest would be like 2 or 3 weeks from now. What? And so they leave the hospital thinking, ugh, did we do the right thing? Because how much more could this cancer grow between now and the time they actually do the surgery to remove it and all of that? So here's what they did. Here's what they did. They ended up totally at peace with this. They called a ministry couple friend of theirs. Say, hey, would you like to have dinner with us? We're already in the city here. Let's go. Let's meet and we'll have dinner. So they did. They met at this restaurant and everything's going good. Their framework, their mind, the framework of their mind is like totally okay with all of this. And the waitress ended up getting saved that waited on them. Now, their ministry couple friend, she said afterwards, she's like, wow, do you realize if your surgery hadn't have been rescheduled, we wouldn't have been meeting for dinner tonight and that young lady wouldn't have accepted Christ. That's amazing. Okay. They could have gone home grumbling about it, but they didn't. Why? Because they knew what we've been struggling or what we've been studying here. They knew heaven rules. And so they just went with it. Okay. And it made all the difference in how God used them. When the unplanned happens to us, that is positive. Okay. When something positive just falls into our life, we're all like, woo, praise God, praise Jesus. This is great. I love this. Okay. When we don't like it, when it's stressful, when it hurts our feelings, and sometimes things do, when it makes us uncomfortable, do we still claim, praise God, he's in control? Not always, okay? So even if what has happened conflicts with your plans, like mine last week, that was such a crazy week. And I'm going to make a confession here tonight too, so get ready, okay? I've got everyone's attention. And our live stream viewership is going to jump about 500 in the next 30 seconds here. unplanned last week. Spent a whole day in my basement with the flood. Okay. Me and Noah, we were getting reacquainted down there. And then my van decides, you know what? It's time you put me to rest. So then there was another pretty good portion of the day spent at a dealership. And driving this and driving that. And why they have to take 5 hours to do the paperwork, I do not know. Okay? You would think they would have a lot of that done before you even get to that point. But there was that day that wasn't planned. And then, here's the confession. Sunday? Wow, did you know I played the trumpet? No, you didn't. Because I didn't play it Sunday. Every one of my vowels froze up. There was nothing. I was just pretending. Yes, I was. I guess you could say I was lip syncing. Okay. I was finger syncing. But here is my thought process. It's the offering. What is offering? That's worship. And the words of the song, holy, holy, holy. Now, I could have stopped. I could have turned around. I mean, it's bad enough the first time you saw me up there on a platform with a trumpet. Okay. Now, I could have turned around and I could have been messing with it, totally distracted from that worship moment. So I'm just full transparency confession here. I did not play. And thank you, by the way, for those of you that congratulated me. Oh, you sounded so good. Yeah. Wait till you actually hear me play. OK, you might change your mind on that one. But all of that was unplanned. I'm telling you, that was a crazy 7 days. And when the unplanned happens, when all this stuff conflicts with your plans, even if it stretches you beyond your limit, or it forces you out of your comfort zone, which things can do that sometimes, or maybe even into a difficult conversation that you'd rather not have. Or sometimes it's just something that makes us uncomfortable or puts us on the spot. Boom, there it is. It happens. We didn't have time to prepare for it. Yes. Okay. It might that unplanned thing might be just setting the stage for God to show up. And that's what we're going to see here in Daniel 3 tonight. And because of our, if we have this, heaven rules perspective on life, our life then becomes a living testimony that God is speaking through, like this couple I told you about earlier when the waitress got saved. This is what Daniel experienced in Daniel 2. We looked at that last week. Remember, he's sitting at home, minding his own business, okay? Then the king orders every wise man in the entire kingdom to be killed. And now he is swept up in this drama. And he had nothing to do with it. And how unfair was that? And all the other things that our minds might go to. It certainly wasn't something that he had planned, okay? And it didn't send Daniel reeling or cause him to implode or explode emotionally. Because he's like, God, the king, sits above the flood. Psalm 29:10 from last week. And then verse 11, he gives strength and peace because he's on top of the flood. So why didn't Daniel implode or explode emotionally? Because he believes that heaven rules. And we're going to be seeing this as we spend this time in Daniel. He viewed God as being in control. Imagine this. He viewed God as being in control of every circumstance in his life. And there's no injustice or personal threat that could lessen Daniel's resolve to just honor God no matter what's taking place. Look how that ended last week in Daniel 2 and verse 47. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is, your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets. Seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Daniel interpreted the dream for the king that he didn't even remember what it was. Look at how it ended. Daniel didn't implode or explode emotionally, this unplanned event, and God used it. The king of Babylon is praising God right there in verse 47. The circumstances were just a platform for Daniel. The circumstances are just a platform for us to direct people's attention to God. And here's how the king of Babylon and what he said to Daniel, here's how it would sound today, okay? Armin, your God is amazing. Your God, Armin, answers prayers. Your God must really be God. That's what the king of Babylon was saying to Daniel. Through how he responded with this unplanned circumstance. Now, let's go into Daniel 3. Who/what do we worship? All right, Daniel 3, verse 1, it says, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 70 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Now, imagine the discomfort. Here's where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego come in. Imagine their discomfort because, and I didn't look at it, but like verse 47 of chapter 2, right at the end there, Daniel requests of the king that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be put over the provinces in Babylon. So they got promoted there in chapter 2. So they're part of this. They have to show up. Now imagine their discomfort, this idolatry, and they have to go and be a part of it. Their country was there in captivity because of idolatry. They understand the evilness of idolatry. And now because of their position, they have to be there. Daniel chapter 3, verse 4. Then a herald cried out, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you will fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, has set up. Height-wise, this statue was about the height of an eight-story tall building. So kind of like Park Glen. That's how big it was. And covered in gold, gleaming in the sunlight. You could see that for miles, I'm sure. They had to fall down and worship that image. But it got worse, okay? In verse 6, and whoso falleth not down and worship, and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So, who are they going to worship? Uncomfortable position to be in, right? Who are they going to worship? How many of you would say, oh no, I'm not bound down to no 8-foot story or 8-story tall statue. I'm not worshiping that. Remember the Columbine shooting? The girl, the Christian young lady out there, pointed a gun at her and asked her, "Do you believe in God?" She said, "Yes." Boom, dead. And I remember when that happened, people were like, "Yeah, I would do that. I would do that. I'm not going to, yeah, put a gun to my head and ask me if I believe in God. Yep, I'll say that." And here we are right here. They've got a decision to make. How many of us would bow down? Who are they going to worship? And yet that question is for us today as well. We don't have an 8-story tall statue that we're being asked to bow down and worship. But since the Garden of Eden, Satan has been trying to get us to not worship God. With Eve in the garden, turning her attention away from God and actually putting it on herself. "You shall be as gods if you eat this fruit." Okay? Now, let's go ahead and just list some of the statues that people worship today. I'll start with one. Work. What's another statue that people worship today? Money, absolutely. What else? Pleasure. Ooh, that's good, Armin. Okay. Work, money, pleasures. Sports. Ooh, another one. Children? I didn't think of that. Self. Okay. Oh, very good. Yep. Status. Yep. Being, yeah, that kind of fits in there with, no, it's different from self-image. Status is kind of like how people view me, right? Is that how you meant it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. Celebrities, though they can be statues. Absolutely. Just popularity, being liked, success, right? What else can you think of? Material things, not just material things, but other people's material things, right? Okay. Our health could be a statue. Yeah. Okay. What about government? Any of you worship the government today? Well, not with who's in office, right? Or maybe so. I don't know. No. Seriously, though. People may worship government and not even realize it. So how would they worship government? I'm not talking about the guy in office, but worship government as a provider for them. Oh, but I get my Social Security and I get my health insurance, or I get this, I get that from the government. And they can become a statue. Okay. But also, we can look at political leaders, the person, as saviors. They're going to save us. They're going to save us from taxes. They're going to save. And here's where these two things can meld it together. This leader is going to save me and save my Social Security, which is the other half of the statue. For some people, that's how they decide the person on who's going to save the other statue for them. And I'm not saying that's us, but for some people, government, political leaders can become a statue. How about cultural conformity? And I can see that in the Christian community even. We want to be, and here's the term, you'll hear it. We want to be culturally relevant. So what does that mean? We got to try to blend in as much as we can with them to look like them so that they will listen to us. And my friends, you're going to see here tonight that it was exactly the opposite that brought people to God. It was not being culturally relevant. We know the story, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? They didn't bow down. They got thrown into the fiery furnace. The king looked in, and I'm really fast forwarding through a lot of things here. So this might be disjointed from this point on. I'll have to find out where I'm at in my notes. But the king looks in. He sees four people. Jesus, a Christophany, someone that looked like an angel, a holy being, a heavenly being in there. And they come out, and guess what the king did? He threw them back in to burn them again. Make sure they burned good this time. No, he didn't. He's worshiping God after this. Now think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. What could they have done when that pressure was on right there? If they're going to be culturally relevant, here's how it would have looked today. Let's just go ahead and bow down. And we'll just pray to God while they're all worshiping the idol. So we look like we're joining them, but we're kind of, and that happens today with this concept in the Christian community of being culturally relevant. We're trying to look like the world, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they could have done that. And I'm not saying it would have been wrong. I'm not saying it would have been right. But they could have done that and justified it in their hearts and maybe even have a good, clean conscience about doing that. But the king would not have worshipped God at the end of that day. And we'll see the proclamation he made at the end of that day, which is just incredible because of them not being culturally relevant. See, the battle here is for worship. Okay, it's not, and this battle isn't going away. It started in the Garden of Eden, like I said, and it's not going away because we see it in Revelation chapter 13, verse 14. And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast. Here's that image again, just like we read about in Daniel. It's going to happen again, which had the wound by a sword and did live. Now, verse 15, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast, it's just like Daniel, should be killed. So this attempt by Satan, this constant drive of Satan to take worship away from God, it's not going away. We're going to have to deal with it. We can't go to sleep and think, oh, because we live in America, we have religious freedom, it's never going to happen here. We can't do that. So this type of persecution is happening right now in many countries around the world. And we can read about it in magazines, and we see little documentaries on it on TV and read books about it. It is literally happening right now. If it ever comes here, what will you do? That's a big one there, right? What would we do? Will you bow the knee of compromise? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they could have bowed and just prayed to God while they were bowing to make it look like they were being obedient. What kind of testimony do we have right now with the world as Christians? Okay? When circumstances happen to us, and we are not talking about someone knocking on your door saying, okay, come on, the president has ordered that all of you at Grace Baptist Church be killed. We're not talking about that circumstance. The unplanned circumstances we have right now, like when you go to your basement and your carpet is floating when you step on it, okay? Unplanned circumstances right now. What kind of testimony do we have? How does the world see us respond with the little things that happen in our life right now? Before we answer the question, okay, if this kind of persecution ever comes to Taylorville, how would you respond? Before we answer that, we need to ask ourselves, how do we respond right now with the little unplanned circumstances that happen? Let's go back to our passage, Daniel 3, excuse me, verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. He reiterated the command to them. How did they respond? And I want to back up in the story here, so I don't want to skip how they responded. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, verse 16, answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Here's what that means. We don't even have to think about what our answer is. We don't have to be slick and crafty and subtle in how we word it. Look what they said.
King, verse 17, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O King.
Wow, that's pretty bold to say that, because what if he doesn't, you know? Oh, well, look at verse 18. He said, they said, but if not, if he doesn't do this, be it known unto thee, O King, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They're saying, hey, King, God could save us and he might not. It really doesn't matter. Because we're going to keep our eyes focused on heaven. Heaven rules. God has a plan in all of this. Whether he saves us or not, and here's how I would add to that. Whether he saves me or not, it doesn't matter. If he saves me, he's got something for me to do here. If he doesn't save me and I burn up, yeah, a few seconds of ouch, and then I'm in heaven, okay, for the rest of eternity. It can't be worse. Dying can't be worse. That's kind of like a way out of all the drama that's going on in this world right now, if it's God's plan. So what is going on right now? We have all of these little circumstances that come up in our lives. And now we're starting to see, oh, great, I'm being tested by everyone. God is preparing us in these little things. This is going to be a big bowl of encouragement for you here right now. OK, God is testing us, preparing us for bigger. I almost hate to say that. Remember these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God had already been preparing them. Back up a little bit with just a little bit of history we had with them. What happened when they first came to Babylon? They were tested a little bit, prepared. There was some preparation going on there with eating the king's meat. And they said, no, we're going to take a stand here on this little thing. We're going to stay focused on God. God's got a plan in this. And he was preparing them for the next thing, for the next thing. We don't know what was taking place in between there. OK, they said, no. So how do we respond with things that we might consider not that big of a deal? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel. They could have said, can you hear them talking? Daniel, come on. It's not that big of a deal. How about if we have, you know, that meat looks really good. How about if we just have like one day a week where we have the meat? You know, we'll kind of keep it balanced. We'll have a little compromise here, okay? They could have said, it's not that big of a deal. Now, would they have said it that way? I don't know, but that's the way we say it with the little stuff. All these opportunities God gives us, these little challenges, the little interruptions in our life, those everyday moments when we have to choose to obey or to compromise, to complain or accept, to give him grief or give him honor with these little things. They're designed. Because heaven rules all circumstances. They're designed little tests to show us that heaven rules. If we have that perspective, we see that. So when we face an even harder test, because we've already been learning in some little things that, I can trust God. I can trust God. When the harder test comes, our hearts will be prepared to give testimony even there with those harder things. I mean, remember Romans 8:28, all things work together, right? They all work together, and we're good with this because I've seen from my own experience, all things do work together. All his plans are working out his plan for us. So God has a plan for you, Cheryl. And all of his plans, all of the circumstances, all of the times and dates and places and people, they're all working to work out his plan for you. Oh, and for me at the same time, and for all of us. That's how amazingly sovereign and great our God is. And he's doing all of that, according to Romans 8:28, for the good
of those who love God. His rule in our hearts, resulting in our testimony to the world.
So let's go to that next point in your notes there. Testimony. It comes from fire. Okay. Let's look at Daniel 3, verse 21. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Now, think about this. Our testimony is the brightest when the pressure is the hottest. The little video clips that you might see on YouTube or Facebook about someone who's gone through a trial, and their video goes viral, right? If I had thought of this, if I documented my Tuesday in the basement with Noah, okay, do you think that video would have gone viral? No. The trial wasn't really that big of a deal, okay? My testimony on that, since there was really no one in the basement with me, no one even saw my testimony. It was good, though, by the way. But when the pressure's really hot, that's when our testimony shines the brightest. And I keep looking at Amy. You guys went through that several years ago with your baby, okay? Wow. And I remember watching them through that. I was like, whoa, their testimony is shining so bright right now with the way they went through that. So when we give our witness, okay, when we proclaim truth to people today, we may face ridicule, we may face anger, we may face even worse than that. We may be talked about, we may be lied about, we may be taken advantage of, and maybe even considered crazy. But look what happens with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They, no doubt, people thought they were crazy, okay? All of these people, all these governmental leaders, from the sheriffs down to the bookkeepers, okay, they're all there assembled, and they're all bowing down, and there's three guys standing there. Everyone's like, man, what is their problem? Are they crazy? And the king gives them a second chance, and they tell the king, no. Man, they're stupid, okay? Yeah, you can just imagine what everyone's saying. But look at verse 25. They've been thrown into the fire. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Okay? Jesus is showing up. He's there. Because they didn't bow, they kept their heaven rules perspective, and Jesus is there. And look what happens to the king now. He comes full circle. Remember Daniel 2, he had that dream, and there was going to be this big statue, and God taught Nebuchadnezzar through that dream. Nebuchadnezzar, we went over this last week. You have what you have because of me. And now in chapter 3, he's building a statue of himself. Okay, but now look at verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Now, I want to read to you what else it says here. In verse 29, the very next verse, it's not going to be on the screen, unless you can pop it up real quick, but that's okay if you can't, because they're all going in their Bibles right now. Verse 29, then the king went on, he said, therefore, I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Do you see what happened? They could have compromised so easy, but they had this perspective. God's got this. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to stay focused on God. I'm just going to trust him. And God used their testimony in such a way that now, compared to what Nebuchadnezzar said in chapter 2 with Daniel, now he's making an official proclamation. Basically, the whole world, don't mess with their God. Wow, that was huge. What just took place there. Folks, sometimes our greatest testimony, that message that people see when they see us or hear about us or our story, our greatest testimony happens when we suffer afflictions, trials, when others then see us going through those circumstances and trusting Him and not being swallowed up in the ordeal. That can be a more powerful witness than never being thrown into the furnace in the first place. Okay? We don't need a fiery furnace. Just people around us see us in how we respond to life. When here's a quote from an author here. When we worship and serve God alone, when we refuse to bow to earthly kings, powers, ideologies, and systems like cultural thinking that's out there today. When we refuse to allow interruptions, inconveniences, and unwelcome circumstances to bury us in frustration and self-pity, we set the stage. We open the door for God's power and glory to shine through us. And that from a book of prophecy, folks, Daniel. Man, I love this book of Daniel. Let's pray. Father in heaven, God help us, please, as we now this week attempt to really look at and consider how we handle the unplanned things that come up in our lives. God, you're preparing us. You're strengthening, constantly making us to be more like you. We don't know what you have planned, but part of this preparation process is just learning to trust you as well, because all of your plans for each of us is good. In Jesus' name, amen.